one ingredient for success that I feel is important for either those of us who are not coming back for the rest of their lives, and even those that are coming back for Shana Bet, and one ingredient that I believe that I'd really like to focus on that I think is a recipe for success. How I'm going to do that is by introducing two people that I was exposed to in my life, that neither of them did I know very well at all, and both of them I had one encounter with. The first, the guy's name I don't even know, we'll call him Jose. Some of the Rebbeim might remember the story. Many years ago, when I was in Shaduchim, I was involved in a very, very serious car accident. It was such a big car accident that it was on the news that morning. After the accident happened, the reporter who interviewed me told me that if I make it home in time for the 6 a.m., that I'll be able to see myself interviewed on the news. Obviously, I made it home by 6 o'clock, and we had the VCR, you know, remember those things? And we had a television in my house. But, so we recorded it. What happened? I'll tell you as follows. I'm not exaggerating at all. This whole story is everything in the story is true. I was driving home from a shidduch date from Staten Island to back to the Five Towns, taking the Belt Parkway. So it was late at night, it was a Aseres Metsuvah. And the date went fairly well, and I was driving home thinking about it, whatever, calling the shotgun, whatever it was. I was driving home, I was on, anybody know the Belt Parkway? The little guy's living in Flatbush. There's a place called the Five Towns. And in order to get there, you actually have to leave Brooklyn, and you have to take what they call the Belt Parkway. So when you're going over the Belt Parkway, there's something called the Marine Park Bridge. Yeah? Marine Park Bridge. So as I'm driving from Staten Island towards the Five Towns, there's a Beamer, BMW convertible, open top, and three people driving. There's a guy in the back seat, flies by me, literally probably 90 miles an hour, literally flies by me, scares me very, very much. And just fly. I've never seen that before. I've never had a car go by me so quickly. Okay, it was late at night. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was really on the road. It was the middle of the week. They just fly by. Okay, so I'm driving and continue driving, and I'm describing this because it's hard to picture. But as I'm going on the incline, going up the Marine Park Bridge, it's a little bit of an incline. So I'm going up on the incline, and as I'm coming down, there's this metal bar that's a few feet thick, sitting in the middle of the road. So I'm in the middle lane. So I said, okay, maybe it's just on the middle my lane. I tried to move over. I see it's all three lanes are closed with this huge metal beam in the middle of a belt parkway. So I had no choice, but I stopped very shortly and I nicked the bar. I'm the first one to get there, apparently. This thing must have just fallen down on the Belt Parkway, literally on the whole Belt Parkway. So I'm on the incline, right? My car is sitting on this incline. I'm in the middle lane. So I'm thinking to myself, well, what do I do? I have like seconds to, I'm gonna get hit because the guy behind me is not gonna see me until it's too late because he's coming up on the incline. So I'm thinking, should I jump out of the car onto the left lane or right, left lane, jump over this thing, which is pretty high, so no car is going to be able to get over it, and just quickly run to the end so I don't get hit, or should I sit in the car and just wait to get hit? So this, this is Aseres Metsuvah. This is right before Yom Kippur, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, what should I do? And I decided, you know, I'm just going to wait. I'd rather get hit in the car than get hit, obviously, outside of the car, especially in the left lane of the Belt Parkway, because you literally won't see this. You're just driving quick. There's nobody on the road. So I embrace myself to get hit from behind. And sure enough, I look in the rearview mirror, and I see this car coming, the headlights coming, and I'm saying something to him. He's coming quickly because he has no reason to think there's anything on the other side. And then I hear this screech, and I get smacked from behind. So I wait for the left lane for them, same thing to happen, the left side and the right side. Right? And now, before you know, there's a pile up. So I'm already used to getting hit, so I'm not as surprised. So I'm the first one to get out. I'm the first one to get out of the car. I get out of the car and look at what the heck is going on here? Why is there a massive pole sitting in the middle of the Bell Parkway? So I kid you not, this is literally out of a movie. I get out of the car and I look. Now, the Bell Parkway and the Marine Park Bridge, you're very high up. There's water. That's why it's called a bridge, because you're over the water, right? So it's like 60 feet down. There's water, right? So I get out of the car and I look on the right side. There's a bicycle path. I don't know if you really know the Bell Parkway. This is a bike path that has like railings on both sides to protect the bikers that are going over the bridge. So there's a fence and there's a pole, right? That's like perpendicular, a 90-degree angle, that was holding traffic lights going across. So this pole, the traffic lights fell down onto the Bell Parkway. How did it fall down? So I see that there's a BMW convertible that's hanging, went airborne, sitting on the railing. Literally, the car is like a U. It's sitting on this angle, this 90-degree angle. It's literally sitting there, pointed downwards to the water. And there's a Hispanic guy in the back, standing in the back, because it was a convertible, standing in the back seat, crying, screaming at me, get me out, get me out, get me out. So I run past the cars, and I'm literally holding the back seat, holding the bumper, the trunk, holding it, trying to hold it down so that it doesn't shift, the two people in front. I thought for sure the driver was dead, because he was crushed. It was like a U. The car was like a U. And I thought both people in front were killed, and just the guy in the back. We weren't sure, obviously. The guy in the back is screaming to me, get me down, get me down. And I'm screaming at him, yo, Jose, don't, no way, Jose. Don't do that. It's a bad idea. If the driver is still alive, then you don't want to. You want to save your friends. You don't want. He's like, no, I don't care. Get me down. Get me down. I'm saying, don't go down. You're going to shift the weight. I promise you, every single part of the story is true. Right, so I'm holding it, and then the other guys come, the other cars, and they all start helping me hold this down until the fire engines come. And they used like the jaws of life, the whole thing, cut the car in half, brought the people out. And I'm not really sure what happened to them. But I want to say something. I have a friend, Josh Pizer, over here, claims that I don't love minorities. So I challenge him to find how many people saved 3 Hispanic lives in my life. How many liberals have saved 3 Hispanic lives? If you could do that, then we have what to talk about. Now, I want to analyze this for a moment. What caused this guy to be? We can't judge him, obviously. How many people are about to overlook a 60-foot wadi and about to fall under? But I don't think most of us would really react that way and say, just get me out. I don't care about my friends. I would tend to think that us as good people, we would not have nothing against Jose, but we would care about our friends and want to save our friends' lives. So what is about this guy that he reacted one way moments before he thought that he was going to die? He didn't die, Baruch Hashem, we were able to save him. But moments before he did, what was going on? Postscript, I was interviewed by a few detectives that came onto the site, because I was the only one that actually witness knew about the fact that they were driving so quickly. So obviously what happened, this is just a note, do not drive very quickly on the Bell Parkway, because obviously when they were going 90 miles an hour, they went airborne as soon as they hit the bridge, and they got lucky that they didn't just go over. Nobody would have known otherwise. Literally just would have fallen into the water, and that was it. So they got very, very, obviously very, very lucky. Anyway, I said the story so many times because I was interviewed by a few policemen by the time, because nobody actually believed the whole story. And then by the time the reporter came, and I knew that they survived, so I was already kind of like smiling. So on the interview in the news, when I got home, I was like smiling as I was telling the story. And my mother's like, what's wrong with you? Like people were about to die. And I was like, I knew that they were okay. Anyway, So the moments before he dies, that's how he was reacting. Now, I was just at a Levaya yesterday, Rav Asher Weiss's Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Weiss, Zichrona Levracha, was Nifteris from Machla, from cancer. And I want to tell you how she reacts moments before she was about to die. And unfortunately, she did die. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, said at his wife's Levaya yesterday, describing her, says that they were in the hospital in New York. She went for last-ditch treatment. She was in New York, and she passed away in New York, and they just brought her body over for kvura, for burial, yesterday. So less than 24 hours ago, it tells over that the day that she was dying, on Shabbos, she died Motzei Shabbos into Sunday morning. Her daughter was trying to get her mother dressed. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, with his two daughters, came in New York with the wife, the mother. So the daughter, by accident, put on her mother's left shoe first, and then her right shoe. Hours before she died, the mother says to her daughter, you put on the wrong foot. But he should put on the left shoe first, and then the left shoe. This is what she's thinking about. Second story of Osho Weiss said about his wife. One of her last times that she was going to drink anything, that she wasn't able to drink. That's what happens when people are at the end. And his daughter gave her mother to drink. And she just woke up from the medicine, which was obviously causing her to go to sleep a lot. Her daughter woke her up to give her something to drink, and she said, I have to wash Negelwasser first. I have to wash my hands first. How could I go eat without washing my hands? Now, basically, that was the last time that she drank anything in her lifetime, and this is how she left the world. So you have here two people that I didn't really know. I mean, obviously, I knew Rebbetzin Weiss a little bit more than Jose, but however, these are two people that were nearing what one person thought was the end, the other person was the end. And what separates the two? So I think the difference is how they live their lives. One person lives their life with a ratzon, we call it tshuka, to constantly be better, to always trying to grow, to take every opportunity that a person has in order to grow. And the other person was concentrating on themselves. Right? You know a person from these types of situations. That's what their netiyah, that's what their natural instincts are. It's because it doesn't happen by magic. Rebbetzin Weiss is just not a magician. Her father was a very, very big tzaddik, as Rav Asher Weiss said yesterday, built a humongous family of tzaddikim and tzidkanios, totally pious people, not because it was natural, but because there is a rutzo, there is a tshuka, there is a want to constantly be better and trying to find ourselves in connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because we know that's the right thing to do. So here we are, we're at the second to last shmooze of the year. What do you say to people that we're finishing this man, we're at this man, we're 2 weeks left? Person can think to himself, as I've spoken to many of my boys, you know, we're at the end of this man, what am I going to accomplish already? How much can I accomplish? And the truth is, yeah, maybe we're not going to, in the next 2 weeks, going to magically be able to read Gemara's perfectly. If we try right now, we're not going to. It's not possible. Maybe it could be a nace, but it's not naturally possible to now, if I haven't really worked at it, all of a sudden magically I'm going to develop that love for Gemara. I'm not going to magically right now be able to sit for hours on end and to learn with Hasmada. Maybe that's not going to happen. But there's one thing that can happen to each and every one of us in the last 2 weeks remaining in Yeshiva. There's one thing that we can do. And we can learn to inculcate into ourselves a rutzen to be better. And that could happen at the moment. It doesn't require learning, it doesn't require skills, it doesn't require intellect. It just requires a person changing his focus to a real rutzen to grow. And everything else will follow, I promise you. The Chafetz Chaim says, he has an interesting question, he brings in the Hakdam and Shmir Salashon. Somebody asked the question and said, what do I do? If at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, most of us probably, maybe except for the Rosh Hashiva, but we all, and the Rebbeim, not me included, is that we were able to, our minds wander a little bit, and before we know it, we're almost at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, let's say by Modim, and we think to ourselves, where was I the past 4 or 5, 6 minutes? in Shmoneh Esrei. Where was I? And all of a sudden, I realized, oh, I didn't have kavanah the entire time. What do I do? So the Chavetz Chaim writes in Shmiras HaLashon, and he gives you a mashal. He says a beautiful mashal. He says there's a kid that has a selling basket of bread in a basket, a little kid in the marketplace. And all of a sudden, this older man comes and starts taking the bread, taking advantage of the kid. One loaf after another loaf, just taking it and moving away, running away with it. So another guy sees the kid and says to him, you know, run away, save what's left. So you have three loaves left? Okay, so take those three loaves and take it with you. Why are you going to sit there and like an idiot and just have him take everything? Run away while you still have the three loaves left. And the Chavetz Chaim says, so it's idiocy to think, oh, okay, I'm at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, I still have more than, oh, you know what? I didn't have kavanah the entire time, so why bother now? Forget it. The whole thing is, as we say in Yiddish, verfallen. The whole thing is gone. Why bother continuing? No! So you have another bracha left, another two brachas left, so we can continue. We're at the last of the end of the Zman, so we have 2 weeks left, so we can continue. Oh, so we should just throw away the rest of it because it's only 2 weeks left? So we can't develop our ratzon, so we shouldn't be thinking about how to properly prepare ourselves for later on? So a person might think to himself, okay, maybe I will develop this ratzon, but who's to say that I'm going to be successful? Who's to say that I'm going to succeed in that appreciation of learning, in that kavanah and davening, in those doing chasadim? Who's to say, maybe I'm going to fall? What's the point? So the Chavetz Chaim continues and addresses this also in the Hakdama, in Shmiras HaLashon. And he says as follows, he says, let me ask you a question. If you were a businessman and you're going into business, would you say that, oh, since I'm not going to make $10 million, so I'm not going to, what's the point? I'm not going to be the best in the field. I'm not going to be the most successful, developer, web developer, whatever, computer programmer, doctor. I'm not going to be the best real estate. I'm not going to own all of Manhattan. I'm only going to own a few buildings. So what's the point? No, nobody would say such a thing. So I'll get what I can get, right? So a person has to believe also when it comes to ruchnius. Okay, so I'm not going to be the best, but I'll try to be as great as I can be. I'll try to use that ratzon to propel myself to do the utmost that I can do at this moment in time. And that doesn't take a lot of time. That can be accomplished in the last week and a half, last 2 weeks that we have within the yeshiva. Or, it's also something to be thinking about for the rest of our lives. This continuous ratzon, the tshuka, to become better and better and better, so we are not like the Jose's of the world, but yet we are like the Rebbe's and Weiss's of the world. So what does Hashem want from us from now? So I think the answer is in this week's Parsha, Ba'alosta. I don't know why I'm at the full cosine, but... In Parshas Ba'alosta, right, in the very, very beginning, we have a beautiful Rashi. The Torah starts off, Dabi al bnei Yisrael, Dabi al Aaron, v'marta elav Ba'alosta, saniros l'mul pnei amunor yairu shiva saniros. So Rashi brings down the famous Chazal and says, Lama nismecha, why, what was the Nisim, what's the Nismichas of Parshas, the Nisim to the Neros, to the menorah. So the Chazal tells us that New Aaron was dejected by the fact that he wasn't able to partake in the Chanukah Samishkan, and he is chol shadaito. He was depressed. So Rashi brings down what happened. Shaloyam and b'Chanukah wasn't the Chanukah Sabbath. Lo hu velo shifto. Amalo kadosh baruch hu chayecha shalcha gedol mishalahem. Sha'ata maduk meite b'saneros. Your portion is going to be greater than theirs because you're going to light the menorah. And I saw Rav Melech Biderman brought down b'shem the Rav Yitzchak Mivolka, right? Rav Yitzchak Mivolka. So he says as follows. He says a beautiful pshat, not pasha pshat, but he says Ba'alosta Saneros. What does it mean, chayecha, that your chedek is going to be greater than that of the other nesiim? He says, Chayecha Shalcha, the fact that you brought your life, you were so despondent, you were so upset about the fact that you didn't have a chelek in the Chanukah HaMishkan. So he says, Gedola Mishalahem, your tshuka, your ratzon, is greater than their maisa of the Chanukah HaMishkan, and therefore I'm going to give you a greater chelek. It's all about the ratzon. It's all about shukah. It's all about wanting to be greater. Says Rav Yitzchak Mivorka, and that is why his Aaron is going with Zoche to get the menorah. As the Ramban says in this week's parsha, that the menorah is a representation really of what it's the chelik that is greater, is the fact that he's doing the avod of the menorah, which is even greater than going the fnai lefnim, doing the avodah and the fnai lefnim. Why? Because the menorah represents an avodah that's going to last forever and ever, which is the habakas ha-menorah, Chanukah, which even though it is no base of mikdash, we're still able to continue this avodah. And I think maybe the connection would also possibly be is that the chashmonaim were all about their ratzon. It's not about what they physically could have done. They physically could not have beaten the avodah. But what was it about? It was about their ratzon to do greater, and ultimately the siyata d'shmaya that they had because of it. I want to share one more story. This is also a very, very true story. I have a friend that I grew up with, who will remain nameless. He, for an obvious reason, which I'll say in a moment, he had dyslexia. Or he has dyslexia. I don't think you ever get over it. I'm telling you that when I was in high school, I went to Hafter High School, and I guess it's true. And I wrote his papers for him because he was too embarrassed. He had dyslexia. You know, dyslexia is, you know, you can't read straight. You also have a hard time writing. He had a terrible time. Very, very nice guy. Terrible time. And I would not cheat for him, but I would cheat for him basically. And so to get him by, because I felt so bad for him. He couldn't write, and I was one of the only people that knew it, obviously besides his parents. And I was the only one that knew it because he was so embarrassed by it. And he was not matzliach at all in school. He was very, very unsuccessful in school. However, we went to Eretz Yisrael for the year. He went to a yeshiva that's no longer around. And after that, he went to a yeshiva called Shoyashev in Farakwe. This is a kid that couldn't read for the life of him. Now, I know the Torah Shraga guys, and they're great. I'm telling you, every single person in this room can read much, much, much better from probably even from the day one when they came into yeshiva. He couldn't read for the life of him. He came home from Eretz Yisrael, and he said to me, Benji, learning is not like high school. He said, learning is about siyata d'shmaya. And I was told by his Rebbe, this Rebbe now has a lot of schuyos, I don't know who his Rebbe, I don't know what his name is, but he said, my Rebbe told me that I can do things that I wouldn't be able to do in scholastically. I'll be able to read if I really want to be able to read. I'll be able to learn if I really want to be able to learn. Okay, I went to YU and he continued in Shoyashev. A few years later, I went back to Shoyashev to visit him. And I'm not exaggerating that there was a line of five or six people who were standing there waiting to ask him questions on the Rosh Hashanah Rebbe or Rosh Hashanah Shir. It didn't make any sense. It still doesn't make any sense to me. Today, Baruch Hashem is a successful balabas and learns Baruch Hashem is kovei itim, and he can learn. And it's almost a joke, you know, but what we talk about old times and think about it, remember the time, you know, between us, it's a joke. But the truth of the matter is, learning and avodas Hashem, not only learning, but avodas Hashem is all about ratzon. The Chafetz Chaim says in Tehillim, Yismach lev mevakshei Hashem. What makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy? It doesn't say Yismach lev, but Osei Ritzon Hashem, says the Chafetz Chaim. It says Yismach lev mevakshei Hashem. The people that are mevakish, that actually want to become greater, they want to be better, those are the people that will ultimately succeed. The Sefer Yashar Rabbeinu Tam says that the best midah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is the midah of ratzon. I ultimately want to end off with one more thing. The Ali Shur says, Shmuel Volbe says, that whatever a person wants to be in life, that's what he's going to. Whatever he accomplishes in life, ultimately at the end of his life, that's really what he wanted to be. That's his essence. A person who's a great doctor at the end of his life, helped a lot of people. So we see that this is really what he wanted to do his entire life. Right? A person is going to be judged ultimately at the end of his life, and it's going to show. Meaning what you accomplished at the end of life, not just what you wanted, but what you accomplished shows who you really are, what you really wanted to be your entire life. It's a scary thing. Right? The person's a garbage man, he's a bum. He could have had, right? That just means that he didn't have a chukka, he didn't have a ratzon to become better, so he didn't become better. So it's something that requires a lot of thought. That means that if a person wants to do something, he really can. And if he doesn't succeed, that means that he just didn't really want to. It's all about a person's ratzon. We have the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yud, B'yach Shadim Rotzei Leilech, Ba Molichinoto, right? That Kadosh Baruch Hu ultimately will guide you where you want to, right? Shavuot Adam Rotzei Leilech, where you want, not where you actually did, but Rotzei. Your ratzon. What is your ratzon? If your ratzon is to really want to shtai, to really want to learn, to become closer to Hashem, you will. Right? And in many instances, it's hard to swallow, but if a person really wants to make that difficult decision, maybe to come back, I'm just throwing out a Shana Ben plug, then you probably will. I mean, it's not so many people out there that really want to come back, and they don't come back. There are cases, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, every year it does exist, but there are people, most people, who really want to do something. If their parents see that you really want to do something, they'll give it to you. As long as they know that, most parents want to do what's best for the kids. It's just all about a ratzon. Again, you're going to be the Rebbetzin Weiss, or you're going to be the Jose that only cares about himself. Last thing we had in this week's parasha, Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni is a chiddush that was not supposed to exist. Right? When do we have a second chance in holidays? This is the only time you have a second chance. You have Tashlumah, but you don't have an actual chag that's replays itself over. All of a sudden, right, we have a bunch of people that says that what? As we learned in Sukkah, right, in the beginning of the year, right, with Tamei Mace. There are people that were Tamei Mace and they weren't able to partake in the Korban Pesach, and they say to Moshe Rabbeinu, famous words, Lama Nigara, why should we lose out? We have a ratzon to be able to bring this Korban Pesach, why should we lose out? And the Kadosh Baruch Hu makes an entire parsha, a new chag. Didn't exist before, was not supposed to exist. A new chag, only because there are people there that wanted to become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Completely based on ratzon. There was no action that they did. I mean, they were tamei meis, they weren't allowed to do it, but it wasn't the schar of the fact that they were tamei meis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that they're going to give them a Pesach Sheni. It's because they actually wanted to do something with Allah. They wanted to be better, they wanted to be closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should be zochah to take these lessons of this week's parsha. The accident that happened, Jose, remember how not to be. Rebbetzin Weiss, should be Milat Yosher for all of Klal Yisrael and her family. How to be, constantly living our lives with the ratzon to become better. Have a good day. Don't forget your phones.